When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. With Vanta, you can automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, HIPAA, and more. Vanta's market-leading trust management platform can help you unify security program management with a built-in risk register and reporting, and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 fast-growing companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. You can watch Vanta's on-demand video at vanta.com/decoder to learn more. That's vanta.com/decoder.
Support for this show comes from Wix Studio. Designers and devs, you might be able to do your thing better on Wix Studio, a web platform with everything you need to deliver bespoke sites hyper-efficiently. Design teams get a ton of smart features that can take the grind out of web creation without it costing per pixel control. Dev teams, you get a zero setup, developer-first environment, combined with an AI code assistant and your preferred IDE for rapid deployment. Search Wix Studio today to explore the full range of features.
Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, editor-at-large of Recode. You may know me as someone who has been boycotting Facebook for years because I forgot my password and I'm too lazy to make a new one. This is actually true. But in my spare time, I'm just a reporter, and you're listening to Recode Decode, a podcast about power change and the people you need to know. We're part of the Vox Media Podcast Network. Today, we're going to play an interview I just conducted with Rose Marcario. She just stepped down as CEO of Patagonia, which is one of the first companies involved in the growing Facebook ad boycott. Patagonia and those other companies, which include Ben & Jerry's and Eddie Bauer, have temporarily stopped buying ads on the platform because Facebook has been slow or unwilling to address misinformation and violent threats on its platform, including from President Trump. I spoke to Rose as part of the Lesbians Who Tech Pride Summit. Let's take a listen. Hi, it's Kara Swisher, broadcasting from Vermont, and I'm here to interview Rose Marcario. Rose, how you doing? Where are you? Where are you, in Los Angeles or that area?
I'm in California. Yeah,
California. That's what I thought. So we have a lot to talk about. You and I talked about 2 years ago, and the title of this is balancing financial goals with social impact and other leadership lessons. It's something we've talked about a lot. And one of the things that I loved when we did our interview, I think it was in Portland a couple of years ago, you were already talking about this. And obviously Patagonia had been doing a lot of things, including suing the Trump administration over a range of things. Why don't you give everyone an idea of what you had done before, and then we'll talk about this moment, because I think everyone seems to have caught up to what Patagonia had already been doing.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the kinds of things we were doing, you know, as soon as basically Trump took office, he with a pen stroke, eliminated 3 million acres of public lands. So we've been fighting that fight, and we sued the administration. We've been very active in the midterm elections in terms of getting other corporations on board to give their employees time off to vote. That was the midterms. Mm-hmm. This is a different situation that we're in now with COVID.
Right.
So now we're focused on mail-in ballots and just making it easier for people to vote in the time of COVID. So we've got over 500 companies in that initiative now. And, you know, these are things, you know, it's interesting. Like when we were talking about it a few years ago in Portland, this is like corporate, was considered like crazy corporate activism.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Right. And now it's like we're seeing corporations boycott Facebook. Right. I mean,
We're getting to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's really changed a lot. And Patagonia has been, you know, every environmental rollback that Trump has done in the last year, and there've been a lot. Patagonia has been involved in either filing amicus briefs, working with activist groups to turn it around. I mean, you know, this is part and parcel of what we've done, you know.
Well, talk about that idea of going back. Of how did you all think about that earlier? Because you were an outlier in terms of doing that. It was like, look at what Patagonia is doing. We wouldn't do that. And you had talked about it as a brand, that this was part of the idea. And I'm not talking about just sort of a virtue signaling brand kind of thing. It's the idea that this is part and parcel to what you're not just selling things. It's an entire, I don't know, not even, I'm not sure what to call it, sort of a company you want to do business with. Talk a little bit, because you talked a lot about how it's not just, it's a business decision, it's a social decision, it's a moral decision, but walk everybody through how you all decided to do this before it's much easier to do it right now.
Yeah, so we've been giving to grassroots environmental activism for 30 plus years. So we've always been funding activists, you know, but we didn't actually act as an activist ourselves. And I think with the Trump administration and the kind of threats to public lands, to everything we've held dear in the environmental movement, I think there wasn't really another choice but to be much more activist as a brand and as a company if we were going to continue, you know, really serving our mission. So to me, those decisions were really like they were in our DNA, you know, like mm-hmm. like it was the next logical step to take. And I think that it was tough in the beginning. I mean, I remember.
So talk about the decision specifics. Yeah. Talk about what the conversation was.
You know,
several years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the conversations about suing the president were pretty short conversations. I mean, like I said, mm-hmm. no one in history had ever basically, you know, gotten rid of 3 million acres of public land in a pinch stroke, you know, and mm-hmm. and the reality is you're a public landowner. I'm a public landowner. You know, if he could do that with those public lands, then he could, the next step is a national park. I mean, you know, there was no end to what the kind of devastation that could be wrought. So for mm-hmm. us, the decision was not we didn't, you know, wring our hands over it too much. I mean,
right.
we consulted with a lot of, you know, our environmental lawyers and, and we made the choice to do it, and it didn't hurt the brand at all. It helped our brand, you know.
Well, talk about that. I mean, because it is a different step from giving money, and here we are. You know, you see corporations doing that. You see very wealthy people. We'll get to them in a second. Doing that sort of sending out the idea of we believe in this. There are political donations, but actually taking on. It's not a lot of people say, look, Rose, you're selling fleece. What are you doing? Like you're funding stores. You're doing this thing. Why is this part of your brand?
Well, because our whole brand is founded on, you know, a love of the outdoors. And if you love something, you want to protect it and preserve it. And so, you know, that's been just a part of our DNA. Our founder, you know, wanted to give 1% of sales, not profits, sales to grassroots activism. And what we found is that, you know, our customers care about climate change. You know, they care about, you know, preserving wild places. They want to have a planet, you know, worth living in another, you know, 20 years. So the decision was an easy decision. Now, did we get some blowback from customers? Yes. You know, but that's okay. You know, I mean, we kind of factored that into the equation. But at the end of the day, we still had a better year than we had the previous year, and it was one of the best years in the company's history. So,
and you think it was directly related to doing this, that people that there's a different kind of customer right now when you're making these calculations, that you have to be true. Like a lot of people say, you have to be true to yourself on Twitter. You have to be true and genuine. It's an important brand thing that's going on with a lot of companies now.
Yeah, well, we grew out of a catalog company, so we have a very, very close relationship with our customer, and we're used to mm-hmm. communicating with our customer. So I think in that way, our customers are really with us, you know. And did it bring new customers to us? I think it did. You know, when we gave away the Trump tax cut, essentially, to grassroots mm-hmm. environmental organizations, we had a really big day that day. And I think it's because it resonated with people that we were doing something that was useful with that money and that was going to be useful for the environment and for people's long-term health.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide which ones are the ones to do? Because right, you know, there's so much incoming, you know, whether it's a Muslim ban, whether it's this, whether it's that. Why did you pick the tax cut? The lands makes perfect sense. Yeah. How did when you're doing this calculation, what do you do? Because, you know, I was talking to some Silicon Valley people who, believe me, are not the best on these issues. They were like, well, we can't do it all. We can't do gay rights, trans rights, this, you know. Yeah. They literally say that. And I'm like, well, you can, but okay. But how do you all decide what you'll be most effective?
Well, the Trump tax cut, we gave that money to grassroots environmental organizations on the ground in the U.S. And we felt like they really needed the extra help right now because we're fighting a mm-hmm. lot of environmental issues. So that felt very, you know, connected to our brand. To some degree, I agree that you cannot weigh in on every issue unless you have an actual point of view on the issue, you know, or you're making, you know, I think we'll see more of it, but, and we are seeing more of it, but for us, it was, I think, a pretty straightforward thing around environmentalism. We also asked our employees this last year on Black Friday, or customers on last year, to donate to grassroots causes. And we said we'd match them. And we raised $1 million from our own customers.
Talk about the modern customer, because it's a we talked about this before, the idea of what a customer is. People are doing a lot of, you know, especially millennials and younger, of where they want to shop. I think that's gone back. I mean, I remember Anita Bryant, and I'm not drinking orange juice and this and that. But talk about these customers, because one of the things, just yesterday, my son, I was like, well, do you think you want to do an internship here? And he's like, well, what stocks do they buy? It was immediate. Like, he didn't want to work for an oil stock, which was really the first time I've heard him, you know, the gears going around the impact that you have via your choices. But talk about these customers, because it's not a new thing, but it seems like it's an important thing for corporations to think like this.
Well, I think, you know, think about it, like the average, you know, teenager, you know, has more information at their fingertips than the president had, you know, 15 years ago, or whatever, right? I mean, there's just so much more information available to make choices and decisions. And I think, you know, when I think of when I was, you know, 17 or 18, and we were fighting AIDS, Kara, you know, and we were licking stamps and, you know, doing ACT UP, you know, rallies. And you know, we didn't have the tools even. This is like the power of the social media tools that we have for activism now. And I think, you know, young people know we're in a climate crisis. I mean, no matter how much money the oil industry pays to buy off politicians, we're in a climate crisis, and you'd have to be foolish not to see that that's what's happening. I mean, you can feel it with, you know, your own body. You can see it with your own eyes. So, you know, I just think they're different. You know, they're want to vote with their dollars. You know,
right?
That's what they want. Right. Yeah.
And what do you get guided by that? Or do you, you know, you were saying you had the best year ever after you did this, did a lot of these things. What kind of relationship then do you have as a brand with your customers? Because you all have, you know, some things are just stores, you know, you go in, you buy a bag of potato chips, that's it, like whatever. When you're thinking about retail going forward, and I do want to get into retail and some of the stuff that you're doing in terms of banning Facebook also, but what do you have to be a brand now? Because retailers are brands, whatever the kind of brand you have to be, what do you think is critically important?
Well, I think
you're going to turn off people. You're going to turn off the Trump people or the base or whatever they're calling themselves now.
But you know, you're never going to please every person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you have a point of view and you know this well, you're never going to keep everybody happy, you know?
I don't want to, but that's a different situation.
And you don't need to have a successful business either.
Right, right. So talk about that. What do you go? Well, they're just not going to buy our. We're going to have a certain population that's not going to be
right. I mean, if someone denies climate change, right? Are they somebody who's going to want to buy Patagonia product anyway? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they just like the product. I mean, you know, right. I think, depending on who you are, you care about who you buy from and you want to vote with your dollars. You know, as a brand though, I don't think you should shy away from, you know, controversy or activism or issues that are really important for advancing society forward and advancing business forward. And I think that's where, you know, that's where some companies really get it wrong, I think, because their employees care about these things, the communities where they have stores care about these issues. And that's the way we think about our stores and have thought about stores, is as community hubs. You know, they're places that people can go and learn about issues. They can learn about voting issues. They can learn about environmental issues in their neighborhood.
We're listening to my Lesbians Who Tech interview with Rose Marcario, this former CEO of Patagonia. We're going to take a quick break now. We'll be back after this.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. Here's the story of innovation told in 5 words. Try. Explore. Connect. Pivot. Transform. See what happened there? As soon as Connect entered the story, innovation became achievable. That's why Deloitte works with clients and tech alliances to bring together the people, ideas, and technologies to overcome, solve, and of course, transform. Connect to what matters for innovation. Start at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
Support for this podcast comes from Hims. It can be challenging for men to speak about their health, and whether that's a fear of being vulnerable or just wanting to keep things private, there are just some things we would just rather keep to ourselves. Hims knows how you feel, which is why they're looking to provide you the help you need discreetly. Hims is a men's healthcare brand looking to provide simple and convenient access to science-backed treatments for men. The entire process is 100% online, so you can get a new routine of improving your overall health in private. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free and in discreet packaging. No waiting rooms and no pharmacy visits. So while it can be tough to deal with this part of your life, it doesn't mean you have to do it alone. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/decoder. That's hims.com/decoder for your personalized treatment options. hims.com/decoder. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See hims.com/decoder for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Jeff Bezos recently, I think it was a bit of a stunt. It was a good stunt when he held up the letter of someone who was like, I'm not going to, it was a pretty racist letter. And he was like, I'm not going to back you. And he was like, I don't want you. He does go to controversy. He's not someone who shies away from it necessarily, but they've had their share of controversies themselves around workers and other things. How do you look when you see things like that, someone that prominent doing something like that?
Well, I think it's slightly different, I think, when it's just like a rich individual, rich and powerful individual doing that, right? Because they're basically saying, you know, I'm not going to support you or, you know, give money to your campaign or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's different when you're a corporation. And what I've seen in the last few years, and we saw it immediately after Trump came out of the Paris Climate Accord, is all these companies came together, disparate companies from disparate industries, and said, we want to stay in the Paris Climate Accord. We're going to keep working to those goals. And I think we need to see more of the good actors, the good corporate actors coming together to make change and push the government. Because in the past, what's really happened is it's been, you know, big oil, big ag, big pharma. And, you know, they need to hear from the rest of us. And they need to hear from the good actors, you know. Right. So, you know, what Jeff Bezos does, I mean, he's kind of in a class by himself. And, you know, and I would never pretend to understand that
what he's doing. It was interesting. I mean, I was like, well, I think he does what he pleases. I feel like that's what's going on there. But a company like Amazon would have a big impact as they start to move in that direction. And obviously even a Walmart that changes its, you know, where it gets stuff and things like that. How do you convince them to be good actors, from your perspective? Let's talk a little bit about the Facebook boycott. Talk about it, because you guys were one of the originals, right, with REI, is that correct? And now others have joined.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Facebook's been, you know, trafficking in conspiracy theories and lies and hate speech and, you know.
Wow, really?
You know, propaganda. And, you know, like they have an $80 billion ad revenue now? I mean, it's some outrageous, you know, amount of money. And the most polarizing things, you know, create the most amount of ad revenue, I guess. I mean, I don't know how they sleep at night, Kara. I mean, I really don't.
Rose, you're singing my song. I've been doing this for years now. But you decided to do it because here's the deal. First of all, it's 1 month, correct? July. And the second is a lot of small businesses. I saw a really astonishing quote by someone who said, I hate this company, but I have to use it. They don't have, like when you have a Fox News and Sean Hannity says something inane, which is pretty much all the time, they get hit when 7 or 8 advertisers, you know, pull off of Laura Ingraham or whatever. They really do suffer. Tucker Carlson seeing it, you know, when there's organized opposition, when they say something racist or anti-immigrant or whatever, that does have a real hit. Facebook has 8 million advertisers, 8 million. What do you imagine you can do here? By doing a, is it symbolic, or what do you imagine can happen here? Because the only way you're going to beat Facebook is by hitting them in the wallet. But this is a big wallet.
Yeah, I've already sort of stepped out of the company when that decision was made. But we had talked about it a lot prior to that. You know, I hope that this coalition of companies continues to grow and grow and put more pressure on Facebook and with it, with an actual, you know, hit list of demands that they expect from them, because, you know, we can't trust the government to regulate them. We've already seen that. That's not happening.
Right.
You know, I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg, Sheryl Sandberg, I don't know where their conscience is, to be quite frank. I don't care how rich they are. They're doing irreparable damage to the country right now. And, you know, that's, you know, visible in every possible way. I mean, I don't know if you read Mark's op-ed about voting, but it was just stupid, you know? I mean, he basically just saying, let's keep the platform totally open to conspiracy theories, hate speech, and, you know, the rest of it.
Fix it by voting.
Yeah, fix it by voting. And it's just total BS. I mean, they don't, you know, him and Jack Dorsey, they don't do anything to really police their platforms. And it can be done. I mean, look at Jeff at LinkedIn, you know, he's very good at doing it. They're very good at doing that. And they keep that platform really, really well, you know, really well in its niche. So it can be done.
Right. But when you're doing this, when you're thinking about organizing these good actors, when you're bringing them together, in some ways, I was just talking about it this morning on our Pivot podcast, and Scott Galloway was making the very pertinent point that maybe it's good for Facebook because then they can sort of tut-tut and say, we hear you, thank you, and everyone feels better. And then they go on doing what they're doing. Because that is their rope-a-dope is their favorite methodology at Facebook, it seems like, for years now. You know, like, oh, yes, we're concerned about privacy. Sorry. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. And then they pay the fine. But what could happen? I think it's probably a user thing where users stop using it. Like, my kids don't use any of the Facebook properties, and it has to do with this. But it's not my influence. It's among the kids that are doing this. But what can corporations do to influence platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Google and others to do the right thing?
The only thing that works, and you pointed it out, you know, the only thing that works is really hitting them in the wallet, you know? And so I think this month long thing needs to turn out to be a much longer thing. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you organize that, you know, among corporations?
Well, I think there are some corporations that there's two ways. I think there's the corporations getting internal pressure from their employees, which I think is very helpful. I think there's also the corporations realizing that they need an alternative and sort of starting to figure out how to kind of take back their own power to do that. I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people have had like zero marketing budgets because of what's gone on with COVID. And they're finding it's not that effective. You know, they don't miss advertising on Facebook, you know, because they're still getting revenue. Their customers are still coming to them. So they might make different choices about that. But I think the more public pressure, the more employee pressure, and the more that there's leadership at the corporate level to bring that together, I think major change can happen. You know, it's slow and then it happens all at once, right?
Well, suppose allegedly. But when you go and join together as a group, how does a corporation go to another corporation and say, we have something in common here. Let's do this. Let's jump together.
Here, it happens all the time. It happens all the time on supply chain issues. It happens all the time on political issues. I mean, you know, if you're a good CEO and you're a good company, you're talking to other CEOs all the time and you're understanding what you have in common and how you can lead together. I mean, I believe really strongly that business is has the greatest power to be an agent for change. And the way we're going to do it is collaborating on these really important issues that are, you know, potentially harming our country in an irreparable way right now. So I think those are the ways. Now, will we be able to do it? Will we be able to get all those people together to do it? I don't know, but I think there's enough public pressure right now that we just need to keep the pressure on.
Have you been surprised by the quick movement of corporations around Black Lives Matter and things like that recently? It's interesting because a couple of years ago there was a controversy. Just today it was Kirsten Green and another actress, Jenny Slate, went off of a show because they were white people playing black people, and they said we're taking up the space. But years ago, there was a similar controversy around a few actors like that, and nothing ever happened. Now these actors are quitting, and some of these companies are doing things. I worry that it's just we're going to make our move here. Significant change is different than signal change, I guess. You know what I mean? And
do you feel
that? And especially, I've noticed around Black Lives Matter that the corporations are right in there going again. Even the NFL, you know, you're seeing a lot of different companies that had been slow to move.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, it is kind of like that. You know, it was like that, it's been like that in the LGBTQ+ movement too, right? You know, like working towards gay marriage, and you don't think you're going to get it, and then it happens. You know, this is a completely different. Black Lives Matter is a completely different thing. I mean, it's, you know, hundreds of years of institutionalized racism, but I do feel like there's this turning point because, you know, it's not just people of color, you know, protesting. You know, it's everybody protesting and wanting change. What I'm more worried about that is just, you know, the complete logjam with the Senate, with Mitch McConnell, that we won't get meaningful legislative change, which we really need. You know, that's a really important part of it.
We're going to take another break now. We'll be back after this with Rose Marcario, who just stepped down as CEO of Patagonia.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
So when you're thinking about doing this, if you were arguing these big corporations to start acting, and they don't, they always want to be on both sides of the two parties. They always want to be, you know, cooperative. How do you then say you can't do this? What I'm thinking about is, because, you know, this is a tech gathering, and I do want to, you know, they don't speak out on, like, you didn't hear a lot of noise about the Supreme Court decision on healthcare, trans people. It just, it's some things they do and some things they don't, which I understand. It's it's a big world, and there's a lot of avenues of attack by the Trump administration. But when they do tie themselves to different parties, I'm thinking of, you know, the Facebook again with the Trump administration, very tight. It looks like a very tight relationship. When you're a corporation, do you worry to being oppositional? Like, what do you think about Facebook doing something like that and other companies? And Facebook is probably the most prominent.
No, I think you kind of have to take it issue by issue. You know, like we worked with the Obama administration on public lands issues, but we didn't agree with everything that, you know, that President Obama did on every issue. I mean, we just didn't. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to take it issue by issue. And that's the best way to focus your attention, instead of saying, well, I'm on a side and this is my side all the time. You know, I don't know. That's the way that we look at it. We really try and look at it in a really issue by issue framework, because if you don't, you're just kind of, I don't know, it just feels like more polarization, you know?
Right, exactly. And I want to talk a little bit about two more things. One is employees, because that's sort of been an interesting force. In tech, it's happened. In, probably tech is probably the most prominent place this is tagged. These pushbacks are, at Google about police reform or Defense Department work, at Amazon over immigration issues, over ICE and things like that.
Yeah.
And you saw, you know, Amazon recognition being sidelined for a year to police departments, although very different from an interview I had with the head of AWS who said, nothing to see here, Kara. And I kept saying, I see that you're bias and races, you know, it's being used badly across the nation.
Yeah.
The impact of employees, how important is that from your perspective in doing that? Because usually the only constituency has been shareholders at a lot of these brands, or revenues, or Wall Street, or whatever. Patagonia, where you just left, is owned by one guy. So it's like, whatever, you know, you don't have to worry about that necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, private companies, it's a different thing, right? Because you usually have one family or one person who's sort of representing the ethos of the brand. But, you know, the whole benefit corporation movement where there's, you know, working to get more focus on other stakeholders besides...
Explain benefit corporation for those who don't
know. The benefit corporation, for people who don't know it, is a legal framework that a company can organize organize with. And there's a group of companies that take an assessment, and you have to reach a certain score to become certified. And the assessment is far reaching. It covers governance, it covers the environment, it covers, you know, multiple stakeholders in the community as well. So it's a way of keeping each other honest and improving and growing and being a better corporate citizen. And the way the current public markets are structured, they're structured to serve one person, you know, which is the institutional shareholder. And that shareholder has, you know, or group of shareholders has tremendous power. And there's lots of CEOs that I talk to who are public company CEOs that say, I agree with everything you're saying, Rose, or yes, we need to, you know, we need to get on these climate issues. But, you know, my shareholders don't care about that.
Right.
But
then what?
Well, then I think new structures, disruption of capitalism, the benefit corporation, I think is a really good, you know, step to do that. We're seeing more and more startup companies not wanting to take, you know, private equity money. They're bootstrapping it. They're finding other ways to finance because they don't want to be beholden to these guys.
Right. I mean, this idea that's taken hold, I know, in tech is this idea of compassionate capitalism, which I'm sort of like, is it possible? You know, it's Mark Benioff and others have sort of talked about that idea. And I appreciate him speaking out. He's one of the earliest to sort of attack a lot of the tech companies that had been sort of abusing their platforms. But is that such a thing, the idea of compassionate capitalism?
Well, I think if capitalism is serving multiple stakeholders, I think it can be compassionate. Right. Because because then you care about your employees, you care about your suppliers, you care about your community. It's different, you know, than just caring about what the earnings per share is. That's not going to lead you to a good long term effect. And to me, this disruption in capitalism has to happen because it's not working now. I mean, COVID exposed a lot of what's really wrong. Right. People losing their health insurance during a, you know, in the richest country in the world, you know, people losing their health insurance during a pandemic. I mean, it's tied to their employment. That's kind of crazy. I mean, you know, the lack of social safety net, we have businesses all over the world. I talk to, you know, CEOs and, you know, chairman of the boards all over the world. And, you know, the rest of the world has a better social safety net for the most part than the US does in a time like this. And we've got 40 million people unemployed right now. And, you know, we don't have the kind of systems that support and care for people. It's crazy. And we can do it. Like, I ran a business that was a really successful business by any measure. And we were giving money to grassroots activism, 1% of our sales. And we were doing a lot of good in the world. And we're giving a lot of money to causes that are really important to advancing, you know, health and beauty and wild places on the planet. So it can be done. you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not rewarded in our current system. It's not appreciated. And so that's why there's sort of this revolutionary quality to all this right now.
Do you imagine employees will play a bigger role in this idea, the idea of employees speaking back? Because, you know, the Google walkout, but all those people are gone from Google. You had Amazon, and for 1 second, people at Facebook spoke out before, you know, they were shoved back in the cult hole. Do you imagine there is an ability of employees to do this, to really get things to change?
I think employees with public pressure, like I said, I mean, it can't just be the employee kind of trying to push the corporation. I think you have to have more enlightened leadership. You have to have, you know, public pressure, maybe political pressure, but I think they play an important role. I mean, there's no question. I mean, I think about my time at Patagonia, and you know, we had an incredible workforce of people who were really energized to come to work every day because they're working for a cause that's bigger than themselves, right? If it was just mm-hmm. selling fleece, it would be another thing. But, you know, they're working for a cause that's bigger than themselves, and they feel really proud to be doing that. And they feel really activated as a human being, helping the planet, helping the world, you know. So I think, you know, I think it's totally possible. There's a lot of proof in companies. They're primarily private companies, I think.
Right. But, they are. That's absolutely true.
There's some great public companies too. You know, they're not all U.S. based.
Right. Yeah, a lot of them are. So last question, we only have just a few more minutes.
Yeah.
One of the things that you said to me on the last, I'd love to know what you're going to do next. I'd like love you to end with that. Like, what do you want to do now? And why did you step down now? You had called, I assume you're not going to become a VC, because I think you called, you had been involved in that, and you called them weenies, I think was the correct.
I called the tech guys weenies, but I feel essentially the same way about VCs. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So tech guys, do you feel the tech guys are still weenies?
I think there's very few. I mean, we're talking about Zuckerberg and Jack and you know, the guys that aren't doing anything about the obvious problems, you know, there's some that I think are good guys and gals, you know?
Right. And what could people in tech do? What should they do to, and I hate to use the term lean in because they're.
Oh God, please don't. I've only seen leaning out.
To do something, leaning out and like pushing your chair away from the shitty table. But what do you imagine people should do? And what are you going to do? Why did you step down? And what are you going to do with your copious time now, Rose?
Well, I think, you know, you can't look at business in a vacuum, right? You have to look at it as part of a community, and you have to think of serving the community and the world. It's not that hard to put all those things together. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. You know? And so I feel like, you know, in tech, there are obvious problems, you know, the propagation of hate speech, conspiracy theories, you know, the issues, the propaganda, the political propaganda, you know, look at this stuff around the pandemic is giving people all this misinformation that they're spouting. Yeah. I mean, it's really bad for society, you know?
Yes, indeed.
And you have to deal with that, and you have to do something about it. And if you don't, you're complicit. You're complicit in destroying our democracy. You're complicit in dragging our society down. And that's what those guys are until they start really doing something actionable about it. And for me,
Would you like to run a tech company?
You know, Kara, we might be talking about it in 6 months. You know, Facebook needs a competitor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, what are you going to do? We'll finish up on that. We got 1 minute. What are you going to?
So I'm going to focus on. I'm going to spend some time with my beautiful wife, and then I'm going to focus on the next steps in sort of making systematic change to corporate. Benefit to the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm going to focus on. In there's a couple of different forms and things that I'm looking at, but I think technology and media is a really important area.
All right. Well, we'll look for you to be running Facebook next
you'll
year.
You'll be
I'm
the
so
first
excited.
Person to know.
Good. Excellent. Anyway, everyone, thank you very much. Rose McCurr is I'm a huge fan of hers. I think she's one of the great CEOs, and obviously you make great fleece. So just let's not focus on that. No, anyway, we really, and lesbians everywhere appreciate it. Anyway, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Bye.
Bye, gang.
Thanks, Rose, for coming on the show. And thanks also to Lesbians Who Tech for organizing that interview.
Learn more about them and the Pride Summit at lesbianswhotech.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Kara Swisher. My executive producer, Eric Anderson, is at Erica America. My producer, Eric Johnson, is at Hey Hey ESJ. If you like this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you shared it with a friend. And make sure to check out our other podcasts, Pivot, Reset, Recode Media, and Land of the Giants. Just search for them in your podcasting app of choice or tap a link in the show notes. Thanks also to our editor, Joel Rabe. Special thanks to Leanne Pittsford, Margaret Clark, and Joe Cooper. Thanks for listening to this episode of Recode Decode. I'll be back here on Monday. Tune in then.
This podcast was supported by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why we do the things we do. Listen to Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.